Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan, and Happy New Year. We hope you and yours had just a fabulous, splendiferous holiday, if that's even a word. But no sooner are the decorations put away than we're gearing up for 60 days worth of speechifying, media, eventing, and deal-making down at the Florida Capitol. Lawmakers return, of course, next Tuesday, 2 months early because of the every 10-year requirement that both state and congressional election districts be redrawn in the wake of the latest census. That and a host of other issues already simmering and could come to what we could, I guess, call a brisk boil in the course of the session. To give us some insights and a possible preview of what may happen and what it means to folks in the Capital Region, we welcome the Tallahassee, at least two-thirds of the Tallahassee Area Legislative Delegation to Perspectives this morning. From State Senate District 6, we say welcome to Bill Monford, former Leon County Commissioner, teacher, school principal, school superintendent, and CEO of the Florida School Superintendents Association, elected to the Senate in 2010. He is now Minority Whip. Congratulations, sir, and welcome,
well,
Senator.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Good to have you here. From Florida House District 9, Michelle Ray Winkle Vasselinden, now in her second term, professor of paralegal and legal studies at Tallahassee Community College, and a whole bunch of other things. Representative, good to have you.
Good to be here, Tom.
Everyone must have had a fabulous holiday because you guys look so rested and, you know, tan and relaxed. And
take a picture now.
Yeah, ready to dive in starting next Tuesday. Well, that really does accelerate the process. Normally, we have a couple months of downtime after the holidays before we get into that first week of March, which is the usual time. But now with redistricting, Senator, I'll ask you, the wisdom on the street, the rumors that I hear, is that really redistricting is going to consume about at least 80% of the oxygen in this year's session, and the other stuff is just kind of going to be a sideshow.
I think there's some truth to that, but I think what you may see differently this year, at least in the Senate, you'll see the redistricting reapportionment issue. We'll be addressing that early on. That's been the plan all along from Senator Gates, who's the chair of our redistricting reapportionment committee. So I think you'll see a vote on the floor real soon. Obviously, then it kicks into the rest of the process, including the legal process as well. But I agree. I think, you know, either way, it's going to take up a tremendous amount of the time, that and the budget. So I think if you take those two big issues, you'll see a tremendous amount of our time will be spent on that. Now, there'll be some other issues, obviously. But those two will be coming in real hard.
Okay. And we are just joined by the final third of the Tallahassee delegation, and that, of course, is Alan Williams from District 8, who is also a two-term kind of guy right now and joins us here on Perspectives this morning and getting him all in there. Well, Happy New Year, Representative.
Happy New Year. It's great to be here. It's great to be here with the Leon County delegation, where the real work happens.
Got just about the entire crew. We were just getting started on the idea of redistricting, and I wanted to ask first Representative Ray Winkle Vasselinden, what are you hearing from the Speaker Cannon? Is he also kind of on the fast track to, hey, let's get this redistricting thing locked down early in the session, then we'll play with the other stuff?
Or that's what it looks like, yes, is getting redistricting done, then going on to the budget.
Okay. And for Representative Williams here, of course, you're in District 8 now. Have you even seen a map of a new District 8, or is that still kind of in play?
Well, we've seen, I guess, toward the end of the last committee week, we saw what some recommendations were that came out from committee. We don't know really what those were based on. Obviously, they said it was from input from citizens that came in and testified at some of these town halls that we had throughout the state of Florida. But I think right now it's really too early to say what, you know, map looks like what. Obviously, the staff of the redistricting committee was tasked with a job to put forth something for us to at least start from. But that's what it is. It's a starting point.
Well, we went through that entire process, and there was no small amount of controversy kind of attendant to that, too. from primarily the Democratic side of the both the House and Senate. And for purposes of clarification, we will mention that all three members of the Tallahassee delegation, Senator Monford and Representatives Ray Winkle, Vasalinda, and Williams, are all Democrats, which kind of begs the question, was there any attempt that you folks saw with not just the what is required from the census, but also the new constitutional amendments to perhaps carve out a more Republican district out of the Capital Region, because we are primarily Democratic here, Senator?
No, quite frankly, in my view, and I served, I'm on that redistricting committee, I thought the process went very well in terms of the process being followed and the openness of it. And coming from a Democrat, it may sound a little strange, but I think Senator Gates did a great job in terms of chairing the committee and everybody on the committee. And I quite frankly did not see much of a partisan discussion at all. And most of the discussion came about from the people there was whether or not they wanted to be whether or not counties would be split or whether or not a district should be alike, if you will, in terms of a coastal district versus rural or a mixture of both. So those were the kinds of discussions. But from my viewpoint, the process was well-defined, and it was followed meticulously. And so at this point in time, I can't be critical of the process. The maps that came out, I'm sure this will be a question, well, what impact would it have on this particular Senate district? It will change, but we knew it would change because the population has grown more in central and south central Florida than it has in north Florida. So just by the sheer number and sheer population shift, if you will, the Senate district in which I serve will have to be shifted to the east. And I mean, that's just a matter of fact, and you can look at that and know what's coming. So again, to me, the process was well defined and rather rigid, and I believe that too that the process, in terms of getting a tremendous amount of public input, was a good move. There was a total, I believe, 26 public hearings around the state. That's the House and the Senate. Members were there on the committee. And we spent literally hundreds of hours taking public testimony. Now, that's not to say that there won't be a lot of controversy over the districts. There already is, and we knew it would be. And there'll be a lot of questions asked once we get farther down the road in terms of exactly where the lines may be. That's why we have a well-defined process, including the judicial system.
Okay, when will we know all this, by the way? Certainly by the end of session, you got to, right?
Well, yes, you have to. Now, what will happen? Is there a guarantee of that? Well, we're supposed to. But I think, quite frankly, that's one of the reasons that the leadership, at least in the Senate, has pushed hard to get an early vote so that the process can work. But again, it's not. I wouldn't want anyone to believe that it's going to be a smooth, flawless process. Quite to the contrary, there'll be a lot of discussion. There'll be a tremendous amount of differences of opinion, but that's the process. That's what the process is designed to do, to encourage open and frank discussion and disagreement.
Mm-hmm. That's the Senate side. On the House side, Representative Ray Wilco Vasalinda, you and Representative Williams share. Yeah, are you going to be flip flopping some voters now, or what?
Perhaps. Here's my take on things. The fair districts amendments, when those went through, I think a lot of us breathed a sigh of relief. That was where I think the victory was. And the process has been very rigid, and people have our fellow members have really, I think, watched their P's and Q's, and I think that's where the victory for the people of the state of Florida was. Now what we've got to do is continue to watch and monitor and make sure that everything's done according to Hoyle, and I think it's been done well. I've not been on the committees, and I'm just, you know, my philosophy is I'm going to play on any field that I get put on, frankly, and I think I can. And I think I've been very competitive, and I think I'm going to continue to be. I think that Fair Districts did the heavy lifting. The work in the committees is extremely important. The work that the courts might have to do continuously after this is going to be important. And the work that the people of the state of Florida are going to have to do to continue to monitor. There was a lot of work done at the committees. The two committees meetings that I attended here, people were well prepared. The citizens of our area were well prepared, spent their time, spent their energy. And I think that's the partnership between the legislature and the people of the state of Florida and even the courts, I think, are in this to make sure that there's a fair process. And I'm really impressed as to how this has been going on so far. But I really believe that Fair Districts set the stage for now what I think we can have more confidence in what's going on. I don't even want to imagine what might have happened without Fair Districts. The two amendments. But that's where a lot of this work was done, and I have confidence that we're moving forward and that the people of the state of Florida need to continue to monitor us. So there you have it.
Okay. Representative Williams, you're kind of on the eastern edge there of District 8. Now, if that line moves, might you have to, you know, move too?
Well, right now we're waiting to see what the final maps look like. And I think – you know, as Senator Mumford said, you know, I had opportunity probably go around the state and sit on about 12 of the 26 town hall meetings that we had on redistricting. And I think what you'll find is that a lot of folks throughout the state of Florida are frustrated that they don't have the type of representation that they think they need. When you look at what we did in the House, I sit on the Senate Redistricting Committee in the House. What you look at what we did in the House versus what they did in the Senate, I think you'll find that a lot of the testimony we got from citizens was in North Florida, at least, there's a clear distinction between almost everything north of I-10 or maybe 90, depending on what generation you're from, and everything south of 90. And it seems like they did that for the most part when they drew the lines, at least initially in the Senate. It doesn't seem like we've done that in the House. But, you know, we'll have opportunity to fully vet those. I've seen that a number of my colleagues, Representative Horner and Representative Dorworth, have already put out some amendments to some of the maps that were put forth in the last committee meeting before we broke for the holiday season. As it relates to my own election in the fall or in this summer, you know, we'll see.
We'll give a preview of that in just a second. We got to take a quick break here on Perspectives. We'll be right back. Boy, this is like a committee meeting here on Perspectives today. This is really great. We got State Senator Bill Mumford from District 6, from District 9, Representative Michelle Redwinkle Vasilinda, and from District 8, we have Representative Alan Williams. And before we go to the phones, by the way, 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809, perspectives@wfsu.org is the email. And, George, you hang on the line for just a second. Give you a chance here, Representative Williams, to finish your thought there on, again, if you have a change in line and you conceivably could kind of have a different constituency when you go for reelection, and you are going to go for another term, right?
I am. I have submitted the paperwork to run for re-election. And, you know, like I said, it's, you know, one thing I've learned from not only this process, but being an avid watcher of this back in 2002, and even being as an analyst intern back in 92, when we went through this again in those prior years, that we're very, very early. You know, it's almost like preseason for basketball. I won't say preseason for NBA because we only got two games this year, but it's sort of like preseason in a normal year where you got to kind of let it go through the process. we'll see what happens during session, and then we'll come out and we'll as Rick Perry said, we'll go back to Texas and reassess what all of this means. But we're excited about the opportunities in front of us. I got a great group of folks that are excited about re-election, and hopefully we'll be able to send everybody back to the House and the Senate and continue to do the work that this delegation has been able to do over the past 2 and especially 4 years.
One thing's for sure, it'll literally change the landscape when it comes to politics here in Florida. That's going to be fascinating to watch. George is on the line right here in Florida's capital city. Hi, George. Welcome to Perspectives.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year to all of you. It's good to hear my dear friend Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda out here this morning, as she always is. She seems to be everywhere at once. But anyway,
Happy New Year, George.
My concern is going to be about the budget, because I know last year with what they did to the retirement system, I know a lot of us got into the drop on after July 1st, which means we lost a lot of money. I figure myself I lost close to $12,000. And, this is... I wonder if some of these guys like Herodopoulos and some of these guys that don't even live here have any heart at all, because they're basically taking a lot of things away from not only state employees. It's like we're the villains in all of this, and they're going to, like, I know Representative Michelle's been trying to get an internet sales tax bill through, which I hope at some day somebody has enough sense to say, look, we got to look at this and get some more revenue for this state, because if we don't, there's not going to be anything left to cut.
Well, George, some good points
well
there.
Said, George.
Let's, since you were addressing a lot of that to Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalinda, on the House side, I believe Speaker Cannon had already said, okay, we're not even going to entertain anything when it comes to revenue enhancement or increases in potential revenue. We're going to hold the line on that, and it's going to be additional cuts. So what do you see happening, at least in the House?
You know, there's a number of schemes to do revenue-neutral pieces with the internet sales. I think everyone realizes, you know, I've been doing this drumbeat for, this is now the fourth year with internet sales, that we have got to reform our tax system, at least to collect all that Florida is owed. And then before we go on to do anything else, we got to know where we stand. So, and that would bring in more revenue, no doubt about it. And that's a great piece. And that's what I've used when people have said, well, how are you going to pay for education and all these things that people are clamoring for, and state pensions and this, that, and the other. Internet sales is absolutely slap dab the most common sense thing to do, because it is not a new tax. It is a tax that's already owed. Well, when we spoke to I didn't actually speak to Grover Norquist, but the folks that have been supporting this bill spoke to Grover Norquist, and that would be Retail Fed, and that would be Tax Watch, and AIF, and Florida Chamber. All these folks also want this bill for the fairness piece of it to Florida businesses and retailers. When they spoke to Grover Norquist, he said, well, we can't have – it's not a new tax. Then he switched the game and said no new revenue. So that's where we're caught, is that the Republicans want no new revenue because they are following Grover Norquist to this to the line, saying, I want to drown governments and make it so small that we can drown it down a bathtub. And that is a paraphrase from Grover Norquist. So that's the game at the Florida legislature at this point. There are some good ways to do the revenue-neutral piece and some very unfair ways to do the revenue-neutral piece. And since the Republicans are in the majority right now, that's what we're looking at. I've got my bill straight on, no revenue-neutral aspect to it, but some other folks have subsumed either my bill or another scheme of my bill in a revenue-neutral bill. We need the money. State workers do a great job for this state. And here's where we can meet with the governor and the Republicans. If we want to get more business into this state, the people who are the reception desk for that and who give us a good name and a good brand out there with other countries and the other states are our state workers. They hold this state together. They do the work that keeps this state functioning. And the governor and the Republicans need to make sure that they understand that, because that's just good business. And that's where I think the Democratic this delegation here can meet with the governor's philosophy and the members of the Republican led legislature can meet and have a consensus where we can honor what state workers do. And in order to do that, we can't keep cutting their salaries. We can't keep cutting their pensions. We can't keep cutting their benefits, because morale is very important to how people function out there. And we also need to be fair and just. And we already have the lowest paid state workforce in the nation, and we already have the leanest state workforce in the nation in a state that's very complex with lots of challenges. And so these are the things that I think we need to be looking at as we go forward, not just, and that has to do with the budget. So we face some great, grave challenges.
Well, Senator Montford, one thing that is likely not to be cut, since Governor Scott is saying we need an additional $1 billion for, is K-12. I have a sneaking suspicion you'd kind of be in favor of that, but where do you think that money's going to come from?
Well, that's the whole issue, and it's the problem. And, you know, I applaud the governor for recognizing the importance of education and recognizing that for the last 6 years, public education has been cut. And also he recognized the fact that $1 billion would be good, but it's not enough to offset the cuts that have already been had. But we are appreciative of the fact that the governor has recognized that public education is important to the long-term vitality of the state, and it's the right thing to do. And so that in itself is encouraging. The problem, though, is where do you get the $1 billion? We're already facing, give or take, a $2 billion cut. And the billion dollars that have been recommended to go into education has got to come from somewhere. And obviously that you're looking at areas like health care. And again, a lot of this is built on the reduction of another 4,000-plus state jobs, which we simply cannot afford, certainly not in North Florida. If you look at North Florida, Tallahassee and the surrounding counties, the area that I serve, there are two main employers, schools, school districts, and state government, including corrections, prisons. In my district, I've got 10 prisons. So if you see even a 10% cut in the corrections budget, if you see a closing of even one prison in North Florida, that's going to have a tremendously negative impact on the business community. When those jobs are taken away for whatever reason, whether they're privatized or they're simply closed and those prisoners are transferred somewhere else, that's going to have such an impact on business. But going back to public education, I dread that we've got to pit public education against health care, because we're talking about the same people, the children that will be hurt from cuts in health care. We're talking about the elderly that will be affected. And so it's not an easy thing just to say, yeah, well, we'd like to have another $1 billion in public education. We should have the courage to step up and say, okay, but where does it come from? And that's where the pinch will come in. I hope that we don't get to that point. I hope that we don't get to the point where we are choosing between good health care and corrections and state workers and education. But it goes back to the same point. That's one way or another, is what Michelle mentioned on the internet sales tax. To me, that's an obvious good source of revenue. It's not a new tax. It's a tax that's owed that we're not paying. And there's a tremendous difference there. And I also want to follow up with the comments on state employees. The governor, being the good, sound business person he is, I'm hopeful that he'll see the importance and is seeing the importance of a good, steady workforce. If you look at the latest data, you'll find that per capita, Florida has the least number of public employees than anybody in the country. So obviously they're doing a good job. Our state employees, including corrections people, are not only underpaid, they're underappreciated. But going back to the budget, to ask your question, it's going to be a tough, tough year with the budget. And we're excited that the governor has seen the importance of replacing some of the fund that had been cut. But again, at the same time, we owe it to the people of Florida to be able to be very cautious and judicious as to where we find that extra $1 billion.
Well, if we're talking about a combination of perhaps enhancing revenues and creating jobs, that brings us to Representative Williams' district over there in glorious Gretna, where we have a little poker room and some horses running around barrels and creation of, what, a couple hundred jobs right now?
Sure.
What's the deal on gambling? How do you see that playing out here with the three proposed destination casinos in South Florida and what Senator Bogdanoff has proposed and all that? What's it going to do for Gretna, by the way?
Well, right now, as we all know, that in Gaston County, there's a referendum that has been put on the ballot that will give them give the voters the opportunity to weigh in on if they want to expand on what's already in Gretna, from the horse track and the poker room to now going to slots. And so it'll be up to the voters of Gaston County to make that decision. But as we look much broader, as we look across the state with this gaming initiative that has now come before us, I think what you're going to find is a lot of folks, number one, are concerned on several fronts. One, what's the impact to the paramutual industry that's already in place that has had a long place in Florida's history over the past almost 80 years from the tracks down in Hialeah and other parts of South Florida to now the recent Seminole Compact that under Governor Crist that we entered into. What's going to be the impact to all of those different gaming pieces that's on the table? And then also, you also have this new sensation that's come about with the internet cafes. You know, what's going to be their role, or what's going to be their plight? I mean, will we regulate them? Will we just outright cancel them out and say, look, you have no place in our communities? I think that's going to be the billion-dollar question. Right now, I can tell you that at least in the House and being part of leadership there, there has not been a decision on what route we're going to take, or no caucus position on the gaming, on the debt resorts bill. I will tell you this. I do have some of the concerns that other folks have as it relates to Central Florida and Disney and Universal Studios and, making sure that if we do expand, if it does happen, if we move in that direction, that we protect. That's a very, very important asset in the state. It brings a lot of money into the state as far as revenues that we use to fund education, to fund health care. So we have to be very careful and not, look a gift horse in the mouth and say, okay, we're ready to go. But at the same time, we do need to look at and say, does it make sense in South Florida where we have a high concentration of tourists from Latin America and from Europe who are used to these types of activities? That's going to be a very healthy debate that we're going to have on both sides of the aisle. I will tell you that I know a lot of Republicans, if they could have it their way, they would probably negate the lottery, and they see that as gaming. So it's going to be a very interesting session. My guess is that we don't get anything done on gaming this session, because redistricting is just going to be so much at the forefront of what the discussion is going to be. And then we have the budget. We won't have real numbers until March. I mean, this budget deficit that we have now of almost $2 billion that the senator mentioned, it could be deeper than that. We won't know until March when the revenue estimating conference comes back and gives us those numbers at the beginning of March. And that won't give us enough time to craft a budget before we get out of here on March 9th. So, I actually see us probably coming back for a special session to deal just with the budget, which is really the only constitutional requirement that we have out of everything that we're working on, except for and redistricting. So it's going to be a very long but early session. And I think at the end of the day, as it relates to gaming, I think it's something that probably gets punted to next year.
Representative Ray Winkle-Vesselin, we've heard that too, that with the redistricting imperative and the fact that we've got to do something with the budget, all of this other stuff, it's fun, it's sexy, and everyone gets all in a froth about it. But in an election year with potentially new constituencies facing a lot of lawmakers who want to go for another term or advance to another side of the Capitol, is anyone even going to touch this material? Or are they just going to say, no, we'll wait till next year?
Yeah, I think you've kind of hit the proverbial nail on the head. I think what's happened is we have challenges in the state of Florida, and the gaming actually impacts the budget. And there's so many of these issues that impact the budget. Internet sales, other ways of taxation, tax reform. A lot of these things are budget impactful, but we may not touch them because they're controversial. And any type of real problem solving, you really have to get your hands dirty, get into it, really talk about it and debate it and take positions at the end when you vote. But I think what's happening is people are cautious because of then having to go out and campaign again in districts that we don't know what they're going to look like. So I think a lot of what leadership is doing is holding back their members, whether it's in the Democratic caucus or the Republican side of the aisle, to hold back their members from being too far out there or putting things on the table that could be controversial. And what happens there is the challenges of the state of Florida get pushed back one more time, solving those challenges. So, you know, but that's politics. And that's part of what goes on. But people need to realize that, that we are pushing off sometimes these solutions so that people can get set and find out what their districts are going to look like and all that sort of thing, and so that leadership on both parties can send their people out into the field with less controversy, less problems, and you just talk about redistricting and the budget's really bad.
Yes, no one wants to play with political poison in an election year. It just, you know, doesn't come with the territory. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM with the Tallahassee State Legislative Delegation. Senator Bill Monford, Representatives Michelle Ray Winkle-Vesselin and Alan Williams. 414-1234 for your calls. We'll be right back. T-minus 5 days and counting until the 2012 Florida legislative session kicks off here in Tallahassee. By the way, we will have live coverage of Governor Rick Scott's State of the State Address back in its traditional time at 11 o'clock Eastern. And up through about noonish, we will hear the governor speak and then the response from the Democratic side of the House and the Senate. And then we are off and running for a 60-day session. Bill's given us a call at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How y'all doing?
Real well. Thank you.
I just recently signed an online petition to bring recall to Florida. And I know that, you know, ultimately the recall is, you know, the election. But, you know, sometimes when you get that buyer's remorse after a few months or a year, I think we should emulate Wisconsin. And I was just wondering what your panelists thought of it and what would be the chances of getting it in the next few years.
Wow. Let's go around the table. Senator Montford, what do you think?
Well, I certainly have no problem with the recall issue. The concern I would have, though, is how often would we do and how much time and effort we'd be spending on recall when then you're right back to an election. So is it worth the time? Is it worth the time and effort to try to recall somebody when, in fact, that will take a good bit of time and it will take money to do that? I would rather spend our time up front before we elect someone that then we turn around and we want to recall. I think the answer to this and the key to this is try to avoid electing people that we want to recall 6 months or a year into service. I blame the public, quite frankly, with that. We need to be able to step up, do our analysis of the candidates, and let's see if that's let's do our job up front. Let's elect the right people for the job to start with. And I think our time would be much better spent if we could engage the public in making sure that we clearly understand and study the issues that the candidates have put forth and make good, wise decisions to start with.
Hmm, an informed electorate, what a concept.
Well, but you know, if you look at it, quite frankly, those of us who have been on the campaign trails, you know, sometimes you see the same people over and over. And again, the old saying is we get what we buy or we get what we put in office. And so we just need to do a better job of studying the candidates, studying the issues, and making wise decisions up front.
And how do we do that?
You know, I very wise, Senator. I appreciate Senator Montford's comments. That was well said. How do we do that? I think that, you know, tough times, you toughen up. And I think in toughening up, what you do is I hope that people start paying attention and actually realize that this is a partnership between the electeds and the citizens. This whole thing about the government did this, the government did that, the government did this. Guess what? I think we've got some documents that say, you know, we the people, you know, and that the government is us. And as Pogo said, you know, the enemy is us. And I think that people need to realize that. And I agree with the senator that we need to make sure that we're on our bully pulpit are saying these things. And this is a start. What Senator Montford has just discussed, what I'm discussing, what I think Representative Williams will probably say, is that people need to pay attention. Buyer's remorse is the easy way out. We need to pay attention up front. The citizens out there need to hold us accountable in a fair and an intelligent and way where there is some tolerance for mistakes, there's some tolerance for us being human, there's some tolerance, what I said in the last segment about working on controversial issues. You can't just work on soundbite kinds of issues. These are difficult, deep, nuanced issues, and we need, the elected officials need to have some room to maneuver and to talk and to converse with an educated, patient to a certain extent electorate who realizes that they are in partnership with us, and then you need to elect people who realize that and who want to work with folks and who want to do problem solving. And I think civic education actually really then comes into that, and all the kinds of initiatives that have gone on, I think they need to be well supported. So get your kids listening to Perspectives.
Thank you for the plug. We appreciate it. Representative Williams, now you're also the Democratic Deputy Whip over in the House, so you kind of have a, by definition, a more partisan of course, you're dealing with an overwhelming Republican majority, so right. You got to be somewhat accommodating and all of that. But do you think a recall, you know, having that type of citizen participation is a good or bad thing?
Well, I will tell you, I supported my colleague Rick Kreisman when he put forth this measure last year. And I will tell you, I've already signed a petition. I mean, I think, you know, we can do it at the local level, and why not be able to do it at the state level, especially in our governor and our cabinet positions. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of folks that said, you know, after the election in 2010, they probably really didn't agree with everything that Governor Scott did, but at the same time, they voted for him. And, you know, I had a number of Republicans who said, man, I wish I had voted for Alex Sink. And not because they don't like Rick Scott. And I think a lot of what you have now with this recall is fuel, one, by an unpopular governor, at least in the polling, and then also all the activity that happened in Wisconsin. But I do think you have to give the general public the ability to say, you know what, you're not what we need for this state. You're not, whether it's ag commissioner, whether it's attorney general, whether it's governor, whether it's chief financial officer. I think that's the best place to start. You know, as the senator said, I think it's a little bit difficult. And I'm not saying this to be self-serving, but I think it is somewhat difficult to do it, especially in the House. Maybe not so much in the Senate because they are four-year terms, and you can probably find opportunities there. But in the House, you're almost campaigning as soon as the campaign is over, you know, with the two-year terms. But I do believe that if given opportunity at the local level to recall mayors and county commissioners and city commissioners and what have you, we should have it at the state level. And that's why I've signed the online petition.
Tom, can I?
Sure.
Let me add to that, and just if I may, just to underscore my comments earlier about being involved. Whether you agree, if we're talking about the governor in this case, whether you agree with Governor Scott or not, in his decisions, you have to give the man credit. I don't know anything that he has done that he did not say that he was going to do in the campaign. Mm-hmm. You talk about the corrections budget. In the campaign, he said his proposal was to cut 40% of the corrections budget. Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out if you cut 40% of the corrections budget, we're going to close prisons. We're going to lay people off. So, and again, I say that not in defending the governor, but to say if we're going to do our job, you better do it up front before you elect people. The governor, give him credit. He hasn't pulled any punches. He's done exactly what he said he's going to do. Now, we may not like it, but he campaigned on a platform. He was elected, and we got, we meaning Florida, got what we elected.
Mm-hmm.
No surprises. If we don't like it, we should have taken care of that. We should have made that known at the ballot box.
We got a couple minutes left for each of you here to talk about, I guess, your pet projects or what you'd really like to advance during the legislative session, given everything with redistricting and the budget and all that. Senator Montford, what are you going to push?
Obviously, I've got some education bills out there that people would expect me to do, and a lot of it is cleanup stuff. I think we need to take a hard look at the changes that we made. All the laws have been passed in the last several years that have an impact on education. So I've got a lot of that scattered out there. But in addition to that, I've got a couple of bills also that floating around. There's an ag bill. I'm serving an ag committee, and I've got one floating around with that I think will gain some traction. In addition to that, I'm also looking at I'm on the higher ed committee, so I'll be paying very close attention to that, what implications will have on not just on Senate District 6, but throughout the state in terms of any changes that might occur in higher education as well.
Representative Ray Winkle, that's only what you're throwing in the hopper.
Well, you know, tax reform, I've got the streaming internet sales tax again. I've got the bottled water, taking that exemption away and now putting it into an environmental trust fund. And then I've also got an energy bill at this point filed. I've got another energy bill to repeal nuclear power cost recovery that I think is highly unfair. I've got an energy bill to push conservation efficiency, which is the cheapest, the best, the least environmentally impactful way to go forward with energy. We need an energy a number of energy initiatives. I don't know that we need an overall complete policy at this point when we may need one, but I'm not sure we're going to get one. So I'm nibbling around the edges. But I want to push renewable energy, conservation efficiency, environmental concerns, tax reform. I've also got a bill to repeal the FCAT because I think that's a totally ridiculous thing to spend over $52 million every year in another state grading the FCAT. So I'm looking at ways to cut things out of the budget. For instance, the death penalty. I also have that bill that I filed to repeal the death penalty. So I think that what I'm trying to do is put forward, I think, challenging solutions to Florida's problems, to put out there an alternative way of looking at things, so that the people have some choices as to what's out there. Not trying to move with the Republican Party, certainly trying to move to show an alternative way of going, and I think I've done that. So I've got the death penalty repeal bill, the nuclear power cost recovery repeal bill, the FCAT repeal bill. I've got a bill to support conservation efficiency, probably another energy bill coming out, and then the tax reform bills that I just mentioned. And I may have another tax reform bill before the session starts. So watch for that one.
Watch this space. Representative Williams, what you got?
Well, first of all, you know, we all suffered and with frustration the elections bill that was passed last year, House Bill 1355, that took away a lot of, I think, the ability. We talk about voters. We talked about recalling elected officials. You know, I see no greater reason to have a recall in place when certain folks put forth and pass House Bill 1355 last year, which dealt with rolling back early voting and other onerous tactics as it relates to voting. But what we've done this year is we have one bill out, which is called Florida Democracy Day, which will give all state employees make the general election day a state holiday and encourage all state employees to go out and vote. It's not only does it get folks to the polls, but it also is an economic development tool because we know although folks may take off, like, for example, upcoming Martin Luther King federal holiday, may take that day off. They also, when they take that day off, they probably also go out and they shop just like they do on other holidays. And so when they're not working, hopefully they're out, you know, stimulating the economy. So not only does this stimulate the economy, but it also shows that we here in Florida are serious about what's one of the most precious aspects of our democracy, which is the ability to vote and the right to vote.
That's a good bill.
Also, we have we in the House, we get, unlike the Senate, they get unlimited bills. We wish we had, and sometimes we wish we had those luxuries, but we get six bills. I've committed now and until I term out of office, if the voters give me the opportunity, to give one of my six bill slots to a student group or students here in the district. And so this year I am, and I'm glad to know that Senator Mumford is sponsoring this bill in the Senate, and he understands civics and an education that students at RAW have come up with. Cyberbullying Awareness Week. And, you know, we have a lot of issues. Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalena can attest to this around cyberbullying and just bullying in our schools. But these students, they had a number of different issues. They talked about distracted driving. They talked about other issues that they thought were important in this community. And they finally came up with the Cyberbullying Awareness Week, which for them, we know that we tried to get this moving. Over the past couple of years, Representative Bullard had a bill. Senator Bogdanoff had a bill last year. So hopefully this will be the next step because obviously we couldn't get it passed. But here's an opportunity to get students involved in the process. They're going to be the ones presenting the bill. They're going to be the ones out advocating for the bill, talking to members, doing letters to the editor, what have you. This is our way to hopefully generate excitement about this process that so many people have become jaded about. And so the best place to start is with our youth. And so I'm excited about this. I'll be working with them over the course of the session to hopefully get this moving. I think it's a great way to show the state of Florida and to show the country that Florida's serious about this. And, you know, we all know that great movements have started not with adults, but with the youth in our community. And so I'm excited about that. And, you know, we have a few other bills that we're going to be looking at. But right now, as a senior member told me when I first came into the House, it was actually a Republican member, and I don't think he was telling me this because I was a Democrat and a freshman, wasn't going to get any bills passed because we proved that wrong. But he said that passing bills is overrated. I think really what we have to focus on are the problems plaguing the state of Florida, health care, education, both at higher ed and at K-12. We have to focus on those issues that are going to really set us apart from, are we going to be a prosperous state? Or are we going to be a state that just kind of wanders in the wilderness for the next 4 years. So we're going to focus on those bills, but at the same time, we're going to focus on trying to be someone with solutions and not someone just throwing grenades from the back row all the time, as we've been accused of doing, but also working in a fashion that hopefully will gain the support. And if they don't, then we're going to call them out on it. We're going to call our colleagues out on the other side of the aisle. If they don't want to work together to solve the problems of the state of Florida, we're going to call them out. And hopefully, as we said earlier in the show, people of the state of Florida will listen and will hear it loud and clear. So after the governor gives his state of the state speech and we have the responses from the House and the Senate, the session starts, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to fight for the soul of Florida. And that's what I think everybody in this delegation does each and every day, not only during session, but throughout the year. And I'm just proud to serve with each and every one of them.
Well, if nothing else came out of this discussion today, I think the one operative phrase is you get what you vote for. And we have voted for Senator Bill Monfort in District 6, in District 9 on the House side, Representative Michelle Graywinkle-Vasalinda, and over in District 8, Representative Alan Williams. All three of you, thanks so much for coming in. Good luck in the session.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks very much for having us.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance from Taylor Cox, Michael Fleming on the phones and emails today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week. More expert opinion and your input right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.